thank you to all who, especially to the kids. They like ringing bells for some reason, you know. Can't get them to do homework, but you can get them ringing bells, you know. Good thing is they did a spectacular job, and we're very thankful for what they have done. Again, I'm always thankful for my friend who plays piano. I love the way he plays. Bear with me if I take a little longer to preach today. Unfortunately, on Monday, I had a seizure, so I had to go to the hospital. So bear with me if it takes a little longer. I'll try to make it as short as possible. Am I on, by the way? Okay. All right. I had promised the last time I was here I would finish up Job's personal trial, but we did something else last time, so we'll just go ahead and get through this one, and we'll see what we can do. By the way, if I have to sit down, I have a chair behind me, so if I do have to take a seat, bear with me. Now, most of you know, and I was just talking this morning, when you have a personal trial, how it's one thing when it hits you where you live, it's another thing when it hits you. Because again, nobody plans on having trials come when they come, but they do come. So Job probably figured that last round with losing his kids and losing his crops and losing his wealth was probably the best thing you have to worry about, but didn't happen that way. I'm sure some of you saw that movie that came out. It was a remake of a movie not too terribly long ago with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, called You've Got Mail, and they couldn't wait to get home at night and check each other's emails. What happened is that they realized that when that mail didn't come that night, they were both devastated because they wanted to hear from each other. Now, you already know that, you know, Joe going through what he's going through. Can you, would you be really mad if I sat down for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. I promise I'll give you a free Sunday. Oh,
all right.
I got my mic on, so I'm okay. I'll need to. All right. Thank you. Ooh. If you can give me a podium or something. Okay, thank you. All right. Yeah, it's not because I'm not anything important. I just appreciate the grace. Okay, well, let me turn back to the right chapter. So, again, I apologize if you came in this morning and I'm feeding back. Oh, yeah, you turn it off, it'd be great. Part of the reason why Job has no idea, if you just turn the mic out, all of it probably would do it. Thank you, sir. Again, he probably figured after that last round, that was probably, am I okay now? Okay, so make sure. He probably figured after that last round, that was probably just about more than anybody had ever seen, and he'll tell you later on that as he was trying to process this trial in his own mind, it's the first time that he ever questions God. Now, I know that none of you have had a trial in your life that have made you question God's wisdom or goodness. Because I can tell you, folks, I have. It's not right to do, but we, you know, it's our body. You know, we're the one that suffers. And what happens here this time is we don't know how many times in our life that Satan approaches us. I mean, that Satan approaches God because we're doing something right. It's a good sign, too, by the way, when you're being approached by God because Satan doesn't like what you're doing. It can pretty much tell you you're on the right side of what you need to be on for God's grace. Because if you do enough to get the devil's attention, you pretty much know you've got God's. And he knows you're watching. Even in Job chapter 1, when he said to Satan, "If you considered my servant Job, there's nobody like him." So you know that this had been going on for quite some time, and Satan's thought process that, you know, okay, I'll find out why God's blessing Job. So then we come to Job chapter 2 here. Again, thanks to my brother this morning for reading scriptures. But it says, again, there was a day when the sons of God became to present themselves to the Lord. And it says Satan came something also to present them as well. And the Lord asked him the same rhetorical question, because the Lord knows exactly where everybody is at all times. He knows how many hairs are on a head. He knows how many birds are there. Jesus said, you know, you're worth more than many sparrows. But Satan gives them the same answer. And God gives him the same reply. And I think it's interesting enough because evidently in his considerations of Job, he forgot to mention something, didn't he? And that was the fact that Job was still maintaining his integrity, even though quite God had, you know, had put him in, let him go through this. And I said, I love God's response there in verse number 3. It says, the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There's none like him on the earth, one that fears God and avoids evil. And still he holds fast his integrity, although you moved me against him, destroy him without cause. And you sit there and you think to yourself, well, if God knows what we're like, listen, we all have different thought processes. And when you go through the trials in life, then you go through when you get cancer, or you get any kind of a disease where you don't know how it's going to turn out. You got to wonder sometimes, okay, God, why are you letting him do this again? Because God said to Satan, you moved me against him without cause. Job had done nothing wrong. So what is Satan's little P.S. at the bottom of the letter? Oh, yeah, by the way, as long as you don't touch him, he's fine with you. Well, you know, listen, God does nothing with an ulterior motive. Always know that, ladies and gentlemen. If you've been saved, you know, 2, 3, 4 decades like some of us in this room have, you know that walking with the Lord means sometimes you're going to get what you ask for and you're going to get what you don't ask for. But I love the fact that Satan always thinks that God's ulterior motive is just that. First time Satan said it's because you prospered him. Well, it wasn't the case at all, was it? Because he found out that Satan took away everything that he had except for his wife, which I thought was interesting enough because he didn't take his wife away. He took away his children. He took away his property. He even took away not only his ability to make a living, but as I told you last time we talked about this, most men in conversation, what's the first thing we bring up, guys, or what's the first thing people ask is what we do, what for a living? Because that's how we identify ourselves. Our job is how we identify ourselves. So Satan comes and says what? Said skin for skin, he'll give all he has for his life. But you put forth your hands down, you touch his bone and his flesh. And when I read that the other day when I was going over my sermon, I thought to myself, well, folks, in case you don't know it, you know, I've got leukemia. And leukemia is a bone disease because it's a disease of the blood. And if you don't know what it's like to have your blood afflicted, because everything in your life changes. Your health changes. Your ability to fight disease changes. Now, if this is from God and God's allowed this to happen to me, okay. But then the Lord said, okay, well, he's being in your hand, but spare his life. And you said to yourself, I'm just thinking out loud here. I'm not indicting God. I'm not saying anything else. What I am saying is that God has the right to do with what he pleases, because we're his creatures. And it may be hard to hear, but when you embrace that as a created child, you'll understand how much more glorious paradise is going to be when we finally get there. So, Lord now gives him permission. But then, and immediately, you don't even see Satan waiting a minute to do this, does he? No, he goes right out and starts immediately thinking he's going to try to prove God wrong. I mean, people know you're never going to prove God wrong. No matter how hard you try, the Bible says in the Proverbs, there's no might nor counsel nor understanding against the Lord. So no matter what you think you know, you don't. Because you don't know in paradise what Job was going to get as a result of passing these two trials. So it says in verse number 7, Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore balls from the crown of his feet, from the crown of his head unto his feet. And now here's poor Job. Now, you know what it's like to get up. I don't know if you've ever had boils or not. They're painful. They get infected. I had one on my head. I had one on my back of my hip. And they are a bear, folks. How long did I have mine for, hon? Yeah. About 2 months. Okay, but you realize that at that point, like I said, that's when, and by the way, if you've never had anything affect you like this, I say this because then you realize, if you've had fairly good health, and I have, this is when you realize just how much more glorious the resurrection is going to be. Because it's like at that point, we're done. We are done with every trial in life. And I loved, like I said, you know, your piano player and I, we get along famously. But one of the things I like about what he does is he puts his heart into it like a child. He's very, very good at what he does. But one of the other things that you see he does is he approaches everything he does for the Lord like a child. And I love that about him. That to me is just something that we all need to see in our faith, folks, is that our faith is not drudgery to us. It's a joy to us. And especially this time of year, folks, this is when God touched earth. And I ask again, because I asked last time and I didn't really pay attention to the show of hands, but how many people have ever been to the Middle East? Okay? No place on earth like this time of year. Maybe if you go in the Passover season, when Jesus dies and then rises from the dead, you realize just how important these 2 days are. But the one day doesn't happen without the other, folks. Jesus left the glories of heaven to come down and rescue us. And folks, if you don't understand what that means, go read the medical aspects of the crucifixion. I would encourage you to. Of course, but that comes, 33 plus some years later. But what happens is, as you look at this, Job takes a piece of pottery. I mean, it wasn't like they had hospitals back then where they could just go get a shot. It's one thing the Lord reminded me of the other day to that talk I told you is that you realize just how blessed we are in this generation to have the facilities we have and to be in the country we're in. Because like I said, if you've ever been anywhere else but the United States, most people I see them do the same thing as soon as they get off the plane. They kiss the ground. Because God has blessed this nation outside of Israel, unlike other nation I've never seen. But then the two chimes in for the first time, verse number 9. Wife. Now you would think after seeing what he went through in that, the last time, she would be sitting there going, all right, honey, we're going to get through this one together. No. She said, do you still retain your integrity? Now, it was one thing when she was on his side. But then he maintains, even when his wife doesn't, he maintains his testimony by saying, you speak as a foolish woman speaks. What? Shall we not receive good at the hands of the wife of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen in this audience, there are times my lovely spouse has to remind me of that. Okay, because guess what? I don't care how long you've been saved. Job, it said, died at, 100 and how many years was it? I'm just saying I'll have it in front of me here. But it says that he still, no matter what God did to him or didn't prevent from him, he still maintained his integrity. So, and as I said last time too, this is not the first time or the last time you're reading scriptures about Satan demanding to have you. Now, folks, you think about that. You're on hell's radar. And when you get a book written specifically about you, about the fact that you're on hell's radar, you know that God's going to use you years, centuries, and millennium into the future. So, at the Last Supper, most of you know that Peter said to Simon, Satan's desired to have you. John 22, 28 to 34, if you want to glance there real quick, or read it when you get home. But Jesus also said, I prayed you that your faith doesn't fail. Because the purpose of getting Peter to fail was what? That you come down to earth and you can't even keep him. It's not what happened, was it? In fact, Peter told him, when Jesus told Peter, when you're converted, strengthen your brethren. You think about the fact that Peter was always the first guy on the boat, always the first guy to run to the crises. But Jesus knew that in that moment in time, he needed to be strengthened in his inner man. And you notice that he didn't despise Peter for having a need. Folks, don't be too proud as Christians to tell God you have a need. It is not the Father's purpose to give us a compass and a book of matches and say, I'll see you in heaven. No, his purposes are to get you what? Stronger for the trials to come. Because like I said, Job had no idea the second one was coming. So I would tell all of you in this season, I just like to talk about him because he's such a nice guy. He was telling me last Christmas, his wife had a gallbladder attack and they spent that week in the hospital. Now, you can expect, folks, most of us don't expect to have something like that creep up on you like that, but it did. But I didn't hear him complaining about God. They just went through it. They got through it, and they're still today. Kids are getting taller and prettier, except for the boys. You know, the boys get more handsome. And we tell you that because if you start saying your boys are pretty, that's come see us later. We'll take them to a Bulls game, or at least a Blackhawks game. We can see a little bit of blood, you know. Things that guys like to see. But it also says, too, that not only did Jesus pray this, faith doesn't fail, but it says he would convert his brethren afterwards. Now, why do you suppose that Satan picked on Peter? Any ideas? This is not a Bible study. I want your feedback, because I'll tell you why he picked on Peter. Because Peter's the one that stood up when nobody else stood up. And you'll find out something, folks, at your work, at your school, at other places, too. When you're the guy that opens your mouth, you'll be the guy they open your mouth about. But I'll tell you something else that will happen to you, too. You'll be the guy when their kids are sick, they'll come call you out. But you pray for my kids, you pray for my wife, because they know you've got God's ear. So look what happens. She says, do you still retain your integrity? What did you want him to do? Would you want him to turn around, spike that piece of pottery in the ground and say, I give up on God? You'd be the very one sitting there rebuking him. But it didn't happen, did it, folks? Because Job had said, your visitation has preserved my spirit. So here's, listen, if you're Job, you'd be confused too. But not only does he say the right things, he says the righteous things. Now, you got to remember, Job's got three friends. And when I look at these three friends with friends like that, who needs enemies? Because they're going to sit there and try to destroy the very foundation of your faith. So for the next 36 chapters, he's trying to show his people that, look, he didn't do anything wrong, and they are convinced he did. Folks, when trials enter your life, remember this. It doesn't mean you've done something wrong. Remember in John, when the disciples asked Jesus, Master, who sinned? This man or his parents that he was born blind? Jesus said, neither. And you can bet they were thinking the same thing. What'd you do? Most people will tell you, you don't get this kind of a backlash and another lash and whatever, but Job said, it's not going to happen that way. Now, I will tell you this, because we all know that people are very, very prima facie. They judge them based on what they see, not what's best, necessarily the truth. Again, can I get a drink real quick? It's right there. Yeah. Folks, forgive me. You need somebody on a free week, I'll give you a free week. It's, again, I just don't like the... Hold on a second. Thank you, honey. By the way, the lip, I bit it. Boy, it looks like it. Actually, the truth is, my wife's wondering where my paycheck was last week. I told her I didn't know. So. You knew that's not true. Look at her. She got a vindictive burn in her body. If she did, I probably would have been dead a long time ago. But I'm just telling you, it's like, but Job starts now, he starts questioning why he's even here. You go to chapter number 3. He says, why didn't I die when I came out of the womb? Because now he's like, God, what have I done to deserve this? He doesn't know, does he? And so, like I said, for the next few chapters, he's got these friends of his that are trying to convince him, Job, there's hidden sin in your life. Folks, that's not only necessarily true. That's the worst thing you could say to somebody. Can anybody in here, would anybody in here be willing to convince Johnny Erickson Tata that she had sin in her life? No. And if anybody would say this, I would take him outside and say, listen, you better rethink that. Don't you think? And I look, Johnny Erickson Tata and I grew up 10 minutes from each other. Let me tell you something, this is one of the sweetest women you'll ever meet. But she didn't despise her circumstances. In fact, we were coming here this morning, and David Jeremiah was had this song about. We watched David Jeremiah every Sunday morning, and people are so sick. I mean, so quick to sit there and to judge a girl who did nothing wrong. Her parents, you know, were godly men and women, and she was in the hospital. And back in those days, like I said, they had the old iron beds and didn't have the pillows on them or anything like that. It was just. But she said, about 10 to 12, the first or second night she was there, she said she saw the door creak open because the lights in the hallway were on. And one of her friends from her class had came to see her. And as she sees the door close, it only opened about a foot, maybe 14 inches. All of a sudden, she looks down the floor and somebody's crawling towards her. And when she saw her friend there, she went, you know, if they catch you, they're going to throw you out. She said, well, throw me out. You're my friend. I came to see you. And you see, what happened was she wasn't worried about what the administrators thought. This was her friend that had just broke her neck. And she wanted to make sure that she had a friend in there with her because that was probably the most lonely and difficult time of her life. Now, I can tell you this because a very, very dear friend of mine, my wife will tell you this, was also in the same class with him. He's a pastor in Michigan. And she wrote him and said, could you come see me? Well, at the time, he didn't. And this is 45 years ago, maybe 50. And so when he saw her preaching at Arlington Baptist Church in Baltimore, he said to her, look, I owe you an apology. He said, I should have came. He said, I didn't. She goes, Eric, I forgive you, but his name, first name was Gilbert, so she called him Gilbert. And he didn't come, but he said, look, you know, I'll do anything you need me to do. You name it, I'll do it. And she said, I'm just glad you're here now. Now, you see, you think she could have had it right in the world to be better with him, but she didn't. It shows you where her heart was even then at 17 years old with a broken neck. She didn't hold a grudge. Even when people she thought to be her close friends abandoned her. He told me that story. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't, you know, I've known this guy for, oh my gosh, 35 years. If you would have told me that and I had never met you before then, or you just walked to me and said, let me tell you a story back here, I would have told you you're lying because I know this guy. But he did. So you think, you know, why do people do things like that? They do. Okay. So what happens is, here she is. But when he finally saw her, you know, he couldn't hug her tight because, you know, she's very fragile from her muscles being compromised. But I'm telling you, that woman, I can't wait in paradise when she, you know, we all get to see her running up to the Savior. You know that's going to be quite a day when she gets there. Okay. I mean, and not only that, but, you know, if you read her stories, she's written a couple of books. My wife was just reading one early part of the year. The fact that she got married and this husband who married her, he takes care of her every day, doesn't complain. And she has just done nothing. I mean, he's done nothing but minister to her. And she says, you know, every morning, you know, it's like the wait for people to come in and you brush your teeth and give you a bath. She said, as an adult, it's very, it's very humbling, but she does it anyway. By the way, you're the one from the Ukraine, right? No, I'm pointing.
Germany.
Who said they were from Ukraine?
My wife.
Yeah, that's what I said, though. Because, you know, Johnny Erickson taught me a song in Romanian, which is still to this day, I still keep in my head when I'm out and about. Yeah, so you end up playing that. I said that they just have a marvelous way of worship. That's why at first it's like, it's not the Russian people, folks. It's their government. It's not them. And, you know, I never, you being German, you understand oh too well what it's like to be labeled for the actions of a few. Yeah. But I can tell you, folks, the Slavic people are some of the sweetest people on earth. Germans too, by the way, but I got to tell you I wouldn't go leave you out there, just letting you know. But I got to tell you that I met a girl from Czechoslovakia when I first moved to Chicago. It's been only about 30 years. And when I mentioned I was working with Russian Jews, she was cutting my hair when she stopped cutting. And I saw in the mirror, you know, the ones in front of you. And she stopped cutting my hair, and I'm thinking, boy, she could really put me in a bad place right now. Don't curve an iron cross in my hair or something. But she said, I hate the German people. I said, why? She goes, you don't realize what the Germans and the communists made us do. And I said, what did they make you do? She said, they took away our native tongue. They taught their language to our young and forbid us to speak our own language in our own country. And I said, I know that's hard. I said, but look where you're at today. She just kind of like gave me that quizzical look. Now she's got the clippers away from my head, which is a good thing. But I said to her, I said, you can't hate the people. It wasn't their fault that they, you know, this guy came to their country. And I said, look what he did. I said, he's put a stain on the German nation that will never go away until Jesus comes back. I said, when you work with Holocaust survivors like I do, I can tell you. It's not easy, folks. Wasn't easy on the German people either, by the way. But just the fact that they had to put up with the idiosyncrasies of a few people. And to this day, they still, I mean, I can tell you, don't go to Israel, by the way, where I've been twice, and mention anything German. And I tell them, when they say that to me, by the way, I'd say, well, how come all these taxi cabs are German? The Mercedes-Benzes, Audis, you know, they're like, they don't have the answer. I said, well, if you want anything to do with Germany, why are you driving their cars? You know, why do you got the coffee makers in your kitchens? I said, see, even you know it's not their fault. So, yeah, I don't mind defending people who are innocent. But anyway, so let's get back to the lesson. Jews, I'm sorry I got off on a rabbit trail like that, but you understand. You know, when you're a minister, I have to know how to pick up a rabbit trail now and then. But I will say this to you, and I want to follow with this, and then we've got like another 10 minutes and we should be finished. When you're falsely accused, and you will be, by the way, this is when you cling to God with all your heart, because God knows your heart. And he knows the fact that people are going to say things about you that aren't right. They're not going to be true. I think it's your little boy there. He wants to, am I already putting him to sleep? Sorry about that, son. That usually happens about 10 minutes into the service, but thanks for being gracious. Right? Look at what they said about our king. Folks, they called him everything but the Son of God, didn't they? And we know, like I was talking to my wife the other night, I said, look at what he came to do. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons, cause the blind to see and the deaf to hear. Sorry, you have my permission. However, if I see you 10 years from now and you're wanting to run out the back door, I'll be back there waiting for you. Just to make sure you get it done personal. I'm teasing. But I said that you think if you come back, if Jesus comes back tonight, folks, you think he's going to hold that against you and ask him to forgive you? No. He's going to get down on that one knee and just come here. Because he understands, remember, you're living in sin. You're going to say things and do things you don't necessarily want to do. Now I'm getting to the older guys in the audience. That's not good, you know. Now your husband's yawning. Is he Russian too? There's a, yeah, you, no, you, or you, what's your nationality?
German.
Oh my God. You don't get many meetings like this one, you know. By the way, how many of you heard who Corey Ten Boom is? You don't, you know, because you don't involve him as Jewish fans. Awesome. All the way up in the balcony, yes, we appreciate that. Because, again, she lived in Holland with her family who were all exterminated in the death camps except for her. And she had said the same thing, you know, with the Germans, how cruel they were. And I said, I can tell you, I said, it's not you, okay, so, yeah. Yeah, we're just going to come give you the goose step, put the heels together. But, I just tell people, it's like, folks, when people get the grace and truth of what God did for them at Calvary and what he did for them by coming here, folks, there's nothing like the vindication of God, because it doesn't matter even if Satan himself accuses you, you're going to be all right. Because God, like you said to Peter, I pray to you that your faith doesn't fail. So here we go. Job is now saying, God, what did I do? And you realize that these people that came to see him, instead of saying, look, Job, we know you've been through the grist mill, but we believe you because we know you. And then if they're his friends, if they're truly his friends, they're going to stand behind him no matter what. But they didn't, did they? They stood on him. And it's kind of hard to believe that when your friends do that to you, you just got to wait for God to clear you. Wait a minute, he's coming back in, folks. It must have been a potty trip. All right, we'll let her back in. I guess she's coming in the far right door here. No, actually, for me, it would be there. For everything, she's not coming back in yet. Then we'll give him a coloring book and crayons. Anyway, so most people are reciprocal people like we all are. We do something good. We expect something good to happen. Now, here it is with Job, you know. He's had just about the trial of a lifetime. Well, he thought he did. Now he realizes he's in the trial of a lifetime. So even in John chapter 9, with the man who was born blind, and Jesus said he did nothing wrong, when he was carrying his mat home, what did the Pharisees do to his parents? They questioned his parents to make sure that he was born blind. Now you would think, folks, how much more evidence do you need than the Son of God telling you he didn't do anything wrong? I got news for you. If Jesus tells you you're doing something wrong, you better pay attention. But what we don't need is we don't need some, you know, holier than now, especially in the middle of a trial, trying to sit there and stand on top of you or trying to breathe. So look what happens. He gets through the trial, which is amazing, because that's hell of a, I mean, that's a whale of a trial. And I say that because, folks, most of us, if you've never had a trial that's afflicted your physical being, don't know what it's like to get up in the morning and can't get up in the morning. And I say that because for any of you that's ever had cancer, you don't know what I'm talking about till you've had it. Okay, my wife will tell you that, too. I'm sure there's lots of mornings she'd like to put me on the balcony and see if I'll fall off. Probably up in a wood, too, but... But these know-it-alls that sit there and have all kinds of answers, when all you're looking for is just the comfort that God gives us to give to other people. Remember what Paul said in 2 Corinthians. He said the trials that we go through are designed to give us the grace to give other people. Not to sit there and stand on them. I cannot stand when you go into churches and it's all you see the pastors do is beat the sheep. Know what they need, folks. They need a pastor then. And I say that then even in this room, it thinks that you've got the right to be critical of everybody else because they're not a Baptist or they're not a, it doesn't matter any denomination, it's everybody that does it. But what happens is here's Job. And then he starts saying to God, you know, what have I done? And what does God do? God goes, where were you at when I made the heavens and the earth? And you know, listen, that might sound cruel, folks, but it wasn't. It was exactly what Job needed to hear. So he realizes that even this trial was ordained for his life. Satan might have been the mouthpiece questioning Job's integrity, but he was right there at the right time. I always wondered what, when you know, the final judgment comes, because we know it's going to come. I often wonder sometimes what's going to happen to Satan. And we know he's going to be tormented forever and ever. That's going to happen. But I just wonder, before he gets thrown in the furnace, there's a couple of times that God just doesn't say, look what I got here for you. Remember this? This is when you question Job. This is when you question Peter. Gabriel, take him to his final resting place. We don't know. I mean, look, all I know is we're going to be better off. Okay, because we've got no one to answer to but God. But I want to say this to you because when Job finally got it, that his trial was designed to make him stronger. It wasn't necessarily designed to torture him. It was designed to make him stronger. God answered with truth and facts. Job answered with what he knew, which is what? His experience. Because he didn't know what was on God's mind. But you understand, when God does this, he's telling you, no matter how bad it looks, cling to him with all of your heart. Now, I say this because, folks, I hope I don't get anything worse than this. I don't know if I can take it. But I can tell you that no matter what happens, God will get me through it. That's why I'm here today, by the way. And I tell you, I want to appreciate the elders of this church that came up and prayed for me before I got in the pulpit today. Or actually got to sit down in the pulpit today. But you get the idea. Job's defense of himself was not some kind of, you know, how about if I just go ahead and give you guys a slap back across the mouth? No. He just said, look, I don't understand this, but I've seen him, so I know he's going to preserve me. So as we get through this lesson today, understand something, folks. You never know what next week's going to bring. It might be your time to be Job, but whatever you do, just understand that God's love for you has allowed this to happen, not his hatred. If he hated you, guess what? None of us would be here. You just look at the guy, you know, gathered sticks. Guy that gathered meal on the Sabbath. God said, put him in ward 3 days, and they stoned him. So if it was that bad, folks, we'd be in the ground. So I say this to you because as we close, I'll stand up here again. I can get up here again. I'm gonna say this to you because you need to hear this as we close. Remember, I told you last time you're being watched. Now this time you're not only you're being watched again. And by the way, if you don't think, by the way, in your trials that other people aren't watching you, your coworkers, your class you're in class with, guys you've known for years, you're kidding yourself. Because they are watching. And I say that to you because you need to know that what you have or how you react to trials may be the very thing that gets them to heaven's gate. Because if they see how you handle something this deep in your life, then they may be the thing that puts them to grace because, you know, they've seen other Christians and they haven't done this. So let me stand up here and I'll obviously have to look more like a preacher again. I'll be all right. Get up. I bet. Okay. But I want to ask an indulgence for all you former Catholics in here, which I'm not. But I want to know if we can sing number 705 as our closing hymn. But you'll notice something that Job had to do as well. Job had to forgive his friends too, didn't he? Yeah, okay. I just 705. It's the called it as well. My soul. Yeah. I think it's 705. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I guess.
705, it is well with my soul. Let's stand together, and we'll do verses 1 and 4 of that. 1 and 4.
Yeah.
You have to do the same three also.
Okay. I should 1, 3, and 4. 1 and 3.